Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 430.
This week on the podcast, it's time to try to dream as big as the Republicans.
Also, if you're in line to protest at the homes of the SCOTUS judges, stay in line.
Plus, when Jen Psaki and Bill Kristol give you life advice, do the opposite.
And if you're going to pursue student loan forgiveness, try actually forgiving some student loans.
But most importantly, you can do more than vote. Burn it down.
Become ungovernable.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yep.
Well, we made it back, you guys. We had Kristen Urquiza from Marked by COVID on, and then immediately both fell ill with our own COVID situations. Me with a long COVID-related thing, Brent with the illness itself.
Yep.
The very one.
And now I'm currently working through my own long COVID
That's
situation.
That's right. Exactly.
Which is real.
Yeah. And you guys, we shouldn't fuck with it, because it was highly unpleasant.
I know. It's weird, too, because I think we had the exact same version.
Yes.
Because it was, like, the exact same amount of time. I mean, mm-hmm. I think our long COVID symptoms are different.
Yes. But well, like, also, you haven't reached the part of long COVID where you could
You're
have my symptoms.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But you, everything that you described to me as what was going to happen, happened exactly.
Well, as soon as Brent told me he had tested positive, I was like, A, cancel everything you have to do for the next 2 weeks. Tell your job you can't work. I don't want to hear anything about you working. I don't want to hear you about you trying to exercise. I don't want you to do literally anything but sit on your couch. He watched basketball, which I don't even really approve of because sports are not my thing. But I
had new confusion.
But exactly. I really like enforced a strict regimen of rest where every day I just texted him, are you resting 100 times a day make him feel terrible if he wasn't resting.
Right.
And I think it worked.
Well, I do think that that was the best advice that you gave me, because the other thing that you told me specifically, and I found this to be very interesting, is that like you will feel better some days than you do others.
Yes.
I took in the span of 14 days, and it was the 15th day that I finally tested negative. And that was actually the first day that I really felt okay also.
Yeah.
Well, except some of the other days where I felt fine.
I felt,
right, exactly. Like I tested positive like on Wednesday and I felt terrible. But then on Sunday, it was the first day that I felt like really great, which was day five.
Right.
And you know, everybody's talking about how you quarantine for 5 days.
And then after 5 days, you
and
just go and cough on anyone.
And then it's miraculously, you're fine, obviously. Yeah. So I was like, well, this is great, guys.
Right.
It's day five and I feel awesome. And I took another test and it was still positive, but I was like, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
we're getting
it
there.
Happens, right? And then the next day I woke up and I thought that it was just all over. I thought that was my last day on earth.
Well, I think what COVID does to you is it makes you think on that day where you finally feel better, like, well, I should go out and do everything. I can finally
do everything. I tried to install a bidet that day.
Yeah, exactly. And that was enough to leave you bedridden for several days after.
Yeah, that's exactly what
happened. If you don't take the resting part seriously, then you end up in this cycle where you feel fine for one day, you try to do literally anything,
yeah.
And then the next day you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah. But even still, it's been now 3 weeks, like Wednesday will be 3 weeks, and like I just don't feel right. And like,
right.
And we were talking about it before the podcast, just sort of like, I wouldn't know how to describe it to somebody. I don't even really know how to describe the symptoms. I mean, it definitely of actually having it. I mean, it felt like a cold, but like everybody keeps asking me like, what were the symptoms? And I was like, I felt like shit.
Right. Generically terrible.
I don't know.
Well, and I think that's actually like giving us some insight into what it is to try to describe like what an autoimmune issue or that sort of thing.
Yes,
you know, had like a weird health issue last year where I went to a doctor and was like, I feel awful.
Yeah.
And I could not pinpoint a symptom.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you're fine.
Yeah.
It's anxiety. And that's frequently happens to women, but it's going to start happening to all of us because we're going to be going to doctors with the idea that COVID is just like a 5-day illness that is fine. And because of that, it's okay to mass infect everyone, which is the current strategy that the administration is pursuing. And then, you know, 3 months from now, we're all going to go to our doctors. Like, I feel kind of shitty. And they're going to be like, it's in your head, but it's not in your head.
No.
You have long COVID.
Well, that's the thing. Like right now, I mean, you know, normally I wouldn't necessarily call myself a morning person, but like I'm usually up by like 8 at the absolute latest, like normally like 7:30. And like I get up and I just sort of like dodder around.
The earliest in morning people compared to me. So that.
Right. But like I'm having trouble like peeling myself out of bed in a fashion that I can begin working on my own couch by like 10 a.m. now.
Yeah, you're
and
still
it's not
in the
even,
rest.
And I don't necessarily I don't feel sick necessarily, you know,
no, but
it's
you
just
feel
sort
tired.
Of like, yeah, it's like hard to, and I assume that that's probably like what having like a, you know, chronic fatigue feels like. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I have that, but like I can imagine that, like, and that you're absolutely right, would be hard to explain to someone other than like, I'm tired, which you're right. A doctor would probably be like, well, sleep more.
Exactly. Right? No, and that's
like,
kind of, you know,
my problem isn't that I'm not sleeping enough. It's that I can't get out of bed.
The long COVID symptoms that I have had that people have taken seriously are when I can say something specific, like I'm having migraines.
Right, I have a migraine. Yeah.
You know, I didn't used to get migraines. I started getting migraines after I had COVID. People were like, oh, migraines, that's bad.
Yeah.
But the worst I felt was I was literally bedridden for 3 weeks of last month. Like bedridden, in intense physical pain.
Yeah, you couldn't sit in a chair.
Could not sit in a chair. Couldn't do anything. And because there was no like clear context to what I was experiencing, and because other people could not relate to it in the same way that you can relate to what it is to have a headache, which is concrete, no one was sympathetic, first of all, but also no one could even understand how serious it was, because they were all like, yeah, no, my back hurts sometimes too. And I was like, that's not what's happening here though. You don't have like peripheral neuropathy in all of your limbs for no reason and no one can diagnose it. Like you are just a person, like we all have bad backs now. We sit at computers all day. Like the distinction between the two was so hard to make for
people. I'm having nerve pain as a person who doesn't have nerve pain.
Right, exactly. And like, what is nerve pain? Like, if you haven't felt that, you don't really understand what someone's talking about. So there were like things like that that were just so hard to articulate. And the idea of going to a doctor and trying to articulate them was horrifying to me.
Yeah.
Because it was so vague and also so unpleasant. And the last thing you want to hear when that kind of thing happens to you is there's nothing we can do and it's in your head.
Totally.
And so, you know, I feel like there's going to be a lot of people experiencing symptoms like that. In part because when I started telling people about this, people kept being like, oh, yeah, I had XYZ terrible health issue for 2 months after COVID too. Or I had, you know, fatigue where I couldn't get out of bed for months. And I was like, why has no one mentioned this to me before? Like everyone was like, oh, you'll be fine. You're vaccinated. You got COVID. But like, when it turned out that everyone else had also been having terrible follow-up health issues for months, I was like shocked, because it was like no one had ever said anything.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Wasn't the leading news story.
It was.
Certainly.
Not this week.
No. No, certainly not.
In any case, this week you might have heard about the leading news story.
Yeah.
You might have heard about the morally reprehensible decision someone made in the Supreme Court to release a draft document that was going to take away all of our rights.
How dare they? Right.
You've heard about the Roe news, obviously, because you're like, if you haven't, I stop listening.
Google it.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to you. We obviously want to lead with that and talk about it, but we want to talk about it in a way that is actually helpful to you and not in a way that is just about how helpless we all feel. Because I think one of the defining things about this experience, and especially going through it now when we're like mass infecting everyone with COVID and like we're at war and we're like doing nothing about student loans and whatever it is that it just sort of felt like a hammer dropped and we were all just like, well, now fucking what?
Yeah.
Like, you know, everyone's tired.
Yes.
And this is also, I feel like every single time one of these things happens, I'm just like so fucking angry because I don't have time right now for it. This is an inconvenient time for them to be taking away my rights. I am tired. I felt that way about the Ukraine war, where I was just like,
I know,
what an asshole Putin is
to start a war obviously. Right now. We're not even going to talk about that.
No, who has time at the moment? But like, I mean, like, what an asshole to start a war now.
Yeah.
We're tired. It's like, let us sit on the couch and do nothing for a few months.
Yeah.
So in any case, we want to figure out how to have a helpful call to action for all of you, because this is not a situation where you want to feel helpless. It's also not a situation where you have to feel helpless. And I think the biggest thing that we have been talking about in relation to this is just that we really need to reconceive of our relationship to government and what we expect of government, and also what kind of imagination we can apply to a situation like this. It's really easy to fall into this trap of people telling you that nothing can be done because Joe Manchin exists or Kyrsten Sinema exists or the government works X, Y, and Z ways and blah, blah, blah. And like, all of this is made up. We can actually do anything that we decide to do. And if you can apply that kind of imagination to your response to this, and you can think to yourself, okay, what's my goal as opposed to what's possible, which I think a lot of moderate Democrats are in the process, are in the habit of asking what's possible instead of what's our goal. And that's, I think, where I really see the distinction between the left and the center most vividly. But we should really be in the process of asking ourselves what's our goal, not what's possible. Because currently, anything's possible because the Republicans have shown us that anything is possible.
Yep.
You can do anything you set your mind to. You can take away people's civil rights.
Yep.
I mean, you can murder people. The sky's the limit. So let's not approach this big problem with the mentality of, you know,
yeah,
we should sort of kowtow to the limitations of yore.
Yes, 100%. And for starters, if you've been thinking about going to any of the homes of the SCOTUS judges to protest,
get in there.
Do that, right? Like, the way that I knew that that was a great idea was when I saw both Bill Kristol and Jen Psaki tweeting that you should not be doing that. And I think just as a general life rule, if those two are in agreement on something about how you should be acting, then you should be acting in the direct, diametrically opposite
That's right.
way. Those two in agreement is how you know that you need to be doing the other thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the sort of, we're going to see a lot of diversions in the next, I mean, this is the same diversion that we saw with them being horrified that someone released a draft memo from SCOTUS or a draft decision from SCOTUS as opposed to the idea that SCOTUS might be willing to strip all women of basic rights.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of distraction tactics. There's going to be a lot of people who tell you, well, we just need to vote harder.
Yeah.
We actually did vote pretty hard last time. I'm waiting to see when my vote takes effect.
I know.
Because it hasn't worked yet. And
we we voted so hard that we actually voted for Joe Biden.
Exactly. that's the thing. You know, that's the thing I can be mad at you about. Earlier today, we were in a cyclical firing squad with
frequent guest
Calvin.
Right. I got mad at Kat. About something.
Right.
And then she got mad at me about something.
No, she got mad at me about something.
Mad at
and then we needed to complete the triangle. Right. And I forgot that I was already mad at you about that. So that's great. We got that all settled.
But I think that, like, that's an important thing to think about, though, because, like, you know, the Dems want us to now vote for them in November because of this. And, like, I think this is a great opportunity for them to fucking prove to me why I should.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, you know, I think that now is the time to act like your hair is on fire, right? Like, these people who are showing up and protesting at the judges' homes are just trying to think of anything. You know, our other friend of the podcast, Grant Sloss, sent us a text earlier today about, like, how some state is now thinking of banning condoms.
Right.
And I'm like, good for them.
Right. They,
because you know what? They are thinking. The Republicans have had a fucking brainstorm about this.
That's right.
Right? And they are, whatever cockamamie wackadoo thing that they can think of, they are going to try right now. And the Democrats need to be doing the absolute same thing. Like, if we get to November and they have done every single thing under the sun that they could think of, including crazy things, like, I want them to, like, let's put the, you know, like, Clarence Thomas. Like, let's impeach him because of that whole Jenny Thomas thing. We talked about that a couple podcasts ago. You know, we've now discovered, we've all seen the clips of all of these SCOTUS judges, you know, lying to the faces of the entire Judiciary Committee in their confirmation hearings about what they were going to do, you know, with the...
With all the settled law,
right? Like, let's subpoena them and ask them why they lied to Congress.
Yeah.
Like, and look, maybe those things aren't even doable. I don't fucking know. But, like, those are the things that I am looking for right now. Like, get a level of mad where you are out there doing bonkers shit. Right?
Yeah, well, I think that's, like, also show me that you understand how serious this is.
Yes,
I think, like,
right.
I was really, you know, I was struck by the fact that the only senator I saw get out in front of anyone and look like she was mildly perturbed was Liz Warren.
Yeah.
You know, she got out there. She got in front of any camera that she could find. She was shaking mad and she yelled about this for a while. And while I understand that that doesn't do anything, I also want to remind people that, like, anything in life, politics is theater. Half of it is theater.
Yeah.
The Republicans are doing better theater than us right now. And if we wanted to look like we actually cared about this issue, it's not just taking stayed votes that are never going to pass, you know, that makes us look symbolically like we're trying.
Yeah, they're going to vote on this on Wednesday and it's going to fail. And then inevitably Chuck Schumer is going to be like, well, we tried.
No, and it's like, why isn't Chuck Schumer shaking mad in front of a camera right now?
Yeah.
Just like feral on the lawn of the, you know, of the Capitol looking for people to yell at. Like, why... Why aren't we seeing theater right now? Theater actually works in Congress, too. That's the other thing. Cory Booker showed us that theater works.
Cory Booker? Cory Bush?
No, Cory Bush. Sorry.
Oh, Cory Bush. Right, yeah, we got the... No, I was going to say... Okay. I mean, he actually does good theater sometimes,
good theater, too. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we got the eviction moratorium pushed because there was a sleep-in on the Capitol steps, right? Like, I mean... More of that, please.
Like, literally anything. Look, like, this is your responsibility. Because that's the other thing, is I think a lot of the time in these situations, Congress looks to us like, well, what do you want us to do? We can't, we tried. And it's like, I'm actually not in charge of thinking of strategy on this.
Right.
I elected you to be responsible for this. This is actually not my problem in the specific sense that it, I mean, yeah. it's my problem in the sense that you've made it my problem.
Yeah.
But like, it is actually your problem to solve what to do.
Yeah.
It is not for you to look to me, a random private citizen, to tell you what to do in this yeah. situation. You actually hire a staff so that you can figure out what to do.
Yeah.
I want you to look like you understand that that's yeah. your job.
Well, this is kind of what Gavin Newsom said. And it was the yeah. first time that I've liked him in a hot minute.
Right.
Because here in California, we are trying to do some things. We're trying to enshrine right. it into law here right now. But he, you know, there was that clip that's going around and you should watch it if you haven't seen it. But he got really mad. He was like, where's my party?
Yep.
Like, and he said specifically his quote that like really spoke to me. He said, where is the counteroffensive?
Right.
And that's my question, right?
Yes.
Like, where is the counteroffensive? And it's not, I don't know what the counteroffensive is.
It's also, you're not a professional counteroffensive thinker ever.
Thank you.
Like, that's not your job.
It's not my job.
You do not get paid to think right. of counteroffensives. There are tons of people who are literally making a full living right now trying to think of a counteroffensive, and those are the people that should be thinking of a counteroffensive.
Right, and they're not doing it.
And they're not doing it. Also, this is in part, like, I think one thing that, you know, Democrats will try to misdirect your rage to Republicans mm-hmm. right now. And I, as soon as this happened, was immediately like, fucking Democrats. Because here's the thing, Republicans are delivering for their constituents right now.
Yeah.
This is what their constituents elected them to do. Is it fewer people than us? Is it people that are getting their vote counted in a way that we in California cannot dream of? Is it representative? No. But Republicans are delivering on what they said they would do to their constituents. They enacted a years-long plan to make this happen.
It's
they were open about the plan.
It's going on for 50 years.
They explained the whole plan to us. They've for years been attempting things that failed, and they stayed with the plan. And
yep.
now they're going to win because of their planning.
Yeah.
We, because of that, were given decades worth of warning that this plan was in action. And it's like, suddenly everyone's like, well, I can't believe this happened. It's like, you really can't believe that a 20-year plan that was played out in public is yeah. happening? Because I think that's maybe the easiest thing possible to believe right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
So I just like I don't think the answer at the moment is to be mad at Republicans because they have done exactly what they said they were going to do. They couldn't have been more reliable in this situation.
Correct.
The answer here is to be is to look inward and think
yes.
about why it was that our plans have failed and why right. we don't have a current plan to deal with their plan having succeeded.
Right. Well, Susan Sarandon.
Oh, I forgot about Susan Sarandon. I forgot how she could have personally enshrined Roe into law and then failed to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's been too bad. That's the punching left
well, she's
on
the most
this.
She's the most powerful woman in the
well,
universe.
I forgot it. I had forgotten that Hollywood creates that kind of power.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
The punching left on this has been specifically interesting to me because I, for years, and if you've been a longtime listener of this podcast, you know about my annoyance about this, have been punching right on this to a very specific group of people,
yep.
which is moderate women specifically, but all moderate Democrats,
yep.
who have been engaging with the right in this debate using their terms.
Yeah. Today we had a tweet, a retweet from Neera Tanden, who,
yeah.
you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know how we feel about Neera Tanden.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was some article about like how the solution for Democrats to get out of this abortion
yeah,
mess.
From Matthew Iglesias, which is like, get out
yeah,
of your town.
Right. Is to, you know, go along with Republicans about...
On
the 15-week thing, right. Like, agree with them that, like, we'll ban abortions after the first trimester.
This is a compromise, apparently.
Right.
That everyone can live
with. The abortion compromise, right.
Here's the thing. And this played out... The reason that this got stuck in my craw in 2016
yeah.
was because there was a brilliant Fox News town hall.
Sure.
Sorry to say that.
Right.
But Fox News did a town hall with both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton during the primaries.
Yeah. And they were the only network that cared to ask about abortion.
They were the only network that cared to ask about abortion. And when they asked about abortion, Hillary Clinton went on record in favor of banning late-term abortions. And Bernie Sanders said, this is not my business. It's between a woman and her doctor.
Yeah.
And the difference between those answers is that Hillary Clinton made the conversation about where's the line, and Bernie Sanders said there is no conversation here.
Yeah.
If Democrats had not been afraid to go on the record supporting people's right to an abortion, not just their right to choose, but their right to have an abortion if they need an abortion,
yeah.
then we would not be engaged in debates about how many weeks it is that we should allow an abortion up into. Because the fact is, Hillary Clinton is not a medical expert when it comes to late-term abortion. She doesn't know why women are getting late-term abortion. She's not in their, you know, doctor's
yeah.
office finding out what... Women who get late-term abortions get them to save their own health
yeah.
or to save their own lives. They don't... It's not an issue with women just being like, oh,
yeah.
I went through 6 months of this.
Even
but
Pete
now,
Buttigieg knows that.
Even Pete Buttigieg knows that.
He explained that
very
well.
Almost nothing, you guys.
Nothing.
Almost
yeah.
nothing. But he explained
right.
that really well. But, like, the fact is that moderate Democrats, because they themselves are pro-life, that's, I want to be clear, Joe Biden is not in favor of you getting an abortion.
Yeah.
He's Catholic.
Right.
Tim Kaine is not in favor of you getting an abortion.
And this is important because I feel like a lot of left, the left has been like pointing this out to people. And inevitably the middle and, you know, Hillary Clinton apologists will say to you, yes, but his voting record is pro-choice.
It's not because he's in favor of the Hyde Amendment.
Well, oh, I'm talking about Tim Kaine.
Oh, because Tim Kaine. He's also in favor of the Hyde Amendment.
Well, I know, but I think his, what they were voting on changed his mind. Right. But what I'm saying is that, like, that distinction is actually important.
Yeah.
Because, like, you are, you're giving space for this, essentially, exactly. Right? Like, you've said that you're
vice president. Well, the conversation is different. If the conversation is about when can you have an abortion, that's different than the conversation about whether you can have an abortion.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the same way that it's like, do you like it when your health insurance company says that you can only have a certain medication because of blah, 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 random thing that they've made up that has nothing to do with your health history and they won't pay for it otherwise? No, of course not, because that's always bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that the way that they have interjected themselves into the medical conversation about abortion is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And the fact is that Democrats have been participating in that because Democrats were afraid to say the word abortion.
Yep.
They, you know, they made it about choice and about all these euphemisms, and they always went on about how nobody wants an abortion. Maybe people fucking want abortions. I don't fucking care. That's not your business.
No.
But also they kind of neutered the conversation and then made it about what the Republicans wanted to make it about, which is about when you can get an abortion, not whether they have the right to ban you from getting an abortion, but when they have the right to ban from getting an abortion.
Well,
that's a totally different conversation.
Right. And speaking about any issue in Republican terms can also be blamed to you can blame the Clintons for.
Absolutely. I mean. And that's the number of people that immediately sprung into action, like, see, this is why we should have voted for Hillary. And it's like, A, the woman got millions more votes than, you know, than Donald Trump. I don't know what to say about the fact that she couldn't fight for it. I don't know what to say about the fact that the system works this way. But this is actually not, there's no one to blame here.
Well, and also, like, it's just, we're getting to the point where we're beyond that in a way that we're also just sort of like, you know, if something would have gone differently, you know, in the 14th century, then also like maybe if we were living in a different portion of the metaverse, then we would also, you know,
exactly. This is an irrelevant conversation in the first place. But also people need to be willing to take responsibility for their role in bringing us to this moment right now.
Yeah.
And she has a role in bringing us to this moment right now, whether or not you think she would have been a better president than Donald Trump. Of course she fucking would have been. A monkey would be a better president than Donald Trump. An elephant would be a better president than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like anyone in any zoo in America would have been a better president than Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that Hillary Clinton doesn't bear some responsibility for this moment that we have found ourselves in right now. And that everyone in that wing of the party doesn't bear some responsibility for this.
Yeah.
And the fact that we elected someone from that wing of the party to be our president slash show leadership in this moment.
Yeah.
Like the reason that the president is not out here fucking livid, Liz Warrening around, is because he does not actually think you should have an abortion.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about your right to have an abortion. He might care rhetorically about your right to have an abortion because he knows his voters care about that right.
Well, and that's also why he himself is also now making this about privacy.
Exactly.
Right?
The reason that he is making this about—
And, like, sure, be concerned about that, but, like, that's, again, playing to—
Republicans. I want somebody to get out there with a full-throated support for why I deserve the right to have an abortion because I want one. For any dumb reason.
Right.
For no reason. For idiocy. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I want people to get out there and say the word abortion. But I also want to talk a little bit about the messaging that we're relying on in an effort to not do anything about this. Because I think that there's been some sort of interesting... we're lacking a distinction between the rhetoric that the left uses to advance specific policy issues and the messaging that the Democratic Party as a whole should be using to advance broad political issues, I think. It is really important to talk about the most affected when you talk about some of these, you know, health issues, social policy issues, et cetera. It is really important for us to acknowledge as we're writing policy, who needs these things the most? Is it, you know, poor women who need, you know, access to abortions the most? And also, if abortions are legal, do they have access to them even if they're legal? Because in many states, they don't.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, does this disproportionately affect women of color? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But when we're talking, I've noticed that on the center left, a way that they deflect from people actually voicing meaningful support in a way that can kind of like create political change is they make it so much about various subsets of women who are most affected that they start making it sound like other women aren't.
Yeah. And well, when have we ever voted on something that was going to, that we voted specifically on because it was going to help, you know, poor Black and brown people?
Right.
Like, women.
It is, of course, important in organizing spaces to have those conversations. But when we are, Rebecca Traister just wrote a really great piece about this, that's why I've been thinking about it. But we have been relying a lot on rhetoric that says that, you know, like middle class white women don't have to worry. This is really an issue about women of color or poor women or blah, blah, blah. And I just feel like I want to be clear that like middle class white women do have to worry about this in ways that I think we're not, you know, and I think for reasons of the Democrats not wanting to act on it, we're not articulating. Like, I think if there's one thing that having a mother who's had an illegal abortion taught me, it's that this is also an issue that middle-class women should be really fucking scared about.
Right.
My mother, pre-Roe, was not someone who was not going to be able to get an abortion. She was always going to have access to the information she needed, to the money she needed, etc. That was not the issue. The issue was that even with those privileges, right, she was not able to have a safe or comfortable experience having an abortion. It was safe in the sense that it wasn't a coat hanger abortion, but it was an incredibly scary experience. It was an experience she had to travel alone for. She got very sick on the plane on the way back and couldn't tell anyone because she had broken the law. She is somebody who had all of the privileges that a person might have to make sure they have access to abortion, but that didn't mean that it wasn't an impactful policy on her. Yeah. That doesn't mean that it made that abortion safe or safe enough. She also had an experience where she almost couldn't get healthcare for miscarriage because she was testing positive on pregnancy tests, you know, having been pregnant, and she needed that to, you know, make sure she didn't have an infection and die of that. So like the way that I think we mobilize broad action on an issue like this is to make sure that everyone knows that like this could have been their mom too, or this could be them too. And I think that in a lot of ways, and the Democrats do this successfully a lot, where they make the issue so specific that they fail to use, and it's because they don't want to go on record supporting broad policy. Like, you know, they don't want to go on record saying anyone should be able to get an abortion for any reason.
Yeah.
And so they come up with like specific circumstances that sound like they're morally defensible.
Right.
And instead of, and then the left sort of takes up this messaging of like, well, this isn't really about us. But like, in this case, I think it would be really important for all of us to point out that this is actually about us.
Well, I think
whoever we are.
Well, yeah, because, well, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And it's important to point out who this affects, obviously, right?
Like, yes, of course.
We need to know that. But just in terms of sort of like, you know, driving votes, which is what we're doing here. This is freaking politics. And they're begging us to vote for them, right? You know, we've all heard over the last few elections that the big get in all of these elections is suburban white women, right? So like,
make sure they know why this matters to them.
Make sure they know why this matters to them. You brought up a really good point in terms of Before we started recording, we were talking about maternal health.
A point that we should give credit to Kat Calvin for, because she's the one who actually brought this up to me. But the reason that we started talking about that was because Serena Williams
had a documentary on HBO where she almost died in childbirth. Because
and then
of blood
suddenly everyone was like, "Wait a minute, rich women are having this problem too." That's the reaction we need, because everyone in America, as we know, is a temporarily embarrassed millionaire. And so they don't care about issues that affect people like them. They care about issues that affect people like the people they aspire to be.
Yeah.
Abortion not being legal affects the people they aspire to be, too.
Yeah.
It affects them, of course.
Yeah.
But it also really affects the people you aspire to be or think that you are.
Yeah.
And that means that we need to be clear that that's the case. And that also means that we need to make sure that we never, in an effort to rightfully prioritize the people that are most affected, use language that makes it sound like we don't have a stake in it.
Yeah.
I've just been seeing a lot of people doing that. I understand why they're doing it. I just don't think in this circumstance it serves the right purpose. Maybe that's a controversial point. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to live in political reality here. Maybe I live in my own political reality.
Right.
But it's so wild, because I just keep seeing women, and women whose mothers have not told them their own abortion story. And by the way, a lot of your moms have had abortions and are not talking about it because it was a shameful secret that people made you feel terrible about in the old days.
Yep.
And, you know, and even in the new days. And so people don't talk about these issues enough. I just sort of have the benefit of having a very loudmouthy mother who's an activist.
Sure.
So she's willing to do this. But even she didn't talk about this, you know, publicly for many years. But, you know, if you don't have someone in your life that told you this story, you should A, wonder to yourself, but also B, think about what it would be to be the person in your life who didn't tell you this story and why they haven't told you this story and what that experience was to them and why they don't want to talk about it.
Yep.
Because it probably was a policy that affected them too.
Yep.
In any case, you guys, with all this going on, one, first of all, call your reps. I know that that doesn't actually do anything. But
well, that's the thing. Like everything that we're telling you here about like how like to rethink government or whatever, like obviously, you know, you're not a United States senator, right? So like what we're really asking you to do here is to call and beg all of your representatives to fucking do something.
Don't beg them. Demand that they do something.
Exactly.
But I mean, like, do whatever makes you feel good. But also, it doesn't hurt to also just be like, we are actually counting on you to fucking try something.
Right, yeah, exactly. One of the things that if they were being honest about how important they thought this was that the DCCC the next morning would have pulled back on their endorsement of Henry Cuellar down in Texas and would have immediately endorsed Jessica Cisneros, a young Latina woman who's very qualified for the seat.
And is also not pro-life.
And is also not pro-life, right? But guess what they did? They did the opposite of that, and they sent James Clyburn down there to have a fucking rally with him.
That's right.
So,
literally the day after this ruling, this leak comes down.
The next day. They're stumping for the only pro-life.
That's right.
The leadership. Democratic leadership, who claims that they're out there fighting for your right to continue to have bodily autonomy.
That's right.
Was campaigning on someone who doesn't think you should have it.
That's right. I know, and I mean, you know, Nancy Pelosi has said before that she doesn't think it's disqualifying to be pro-life to be a Democrat, but you know what?
Well, they stood for Dan Lipinski too, right?
When he was stood for Dan Lipinski as well. It should be disqualifying.
It should be.
I mean, listen, I don't care where you stand on abortion personally.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think, you know, is a distinction that they are failing to make as well. Because like with gay marriage and your inability, you don't ever have to marry a gay person if you don't want to be gay married. That's one of the great things about America.
Yeah.
You can marry a straight person if you feel like it. You shouldn't, but you could. And like with gay marriage, another issue that there was a fake moral panic about, you also don't ever have to have an abortion if you don't want one.
Too true.
If your religion teaches you that abortion is wrong and life begins at conception, you might wonder why we don't pay for any childcare or any, you know, of the services you might need to raise happy, healthy children, but whatever. You are free to have as many ill-advised children as your heart desires.
Yeah.
There is a distinction between that as a personal policy and my right as a person who doesn't practice your religion to do what I want with my body.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, you know, I think that distinction should be central to the Democratic identity.
Yeah. Well, so, and the other thing, yes, you're at, I
Henry Cuellar could go on not getting an abortion to his heart's content.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing I think is that, you know, sadly, we have two parties. So at a certain point, instead of seven. So there isn't a party for Henry Cuellar to belong to where he's a Democrat and votes with Donald Trump 80% of the time and is also pro-life. So like if he's a Democrat, then we do actually have to have litmus tests on some things. And I would contend that this is one of them.
I would also say that one of the things that we've accepted as a point of inaction from our Democratic leadership is the idea that they can't do anything about people like this. But let the Republicans inspire you to know that leadership
that
can do anything they fucking want about this. Because Republicans do not have these kinds of detractors. And the reason is because of their leadership. Now, look, I'm not here to defend Mitch McConnell because he's the evilest man on the planet.
Sure.
But I am here to say that he's pretty effective at his leadership role. And one of the ways in which he's been effective, and one of the ways in which I know Nancy Pelosi has been effective in the past, and why I know that she could be effective if she wanted to be, is because she's gotten every squad member to vote on numerous terrible policy choices by potentially threatening their grandchildren or whatever. I don't know what she does to get these votes.
Yeah.
But Nancy Pelosi knows how to deliver votes if she needs them, which says to me that she knows how to get people to fall in line if she needs them to. Maybe Chuck Schumer needs some lessons in that. But the point is, leadership could be trying things with these people. There are things that they can do to make sure that the cinemas and mansions of the world fall in line. They are choosing not to do those things. They are not doing those things because of money, because they are fearful of the electoral consequences, because they're fearful that those people will change parties.
Yeah.
But those people would face that same pressure on the right. So the idea that we're like powerless against Kyrsten Sinema, one of the silliest people on the planet, just like isn't correct.
I agree.
In any case.
Oh boy.
Now, Democrats at the state level are still being stupid in the march to try to to try to shore up some of these rights at the state level, which a lot of state legislatures in Democratic states have been doing. You know, I think in New York, they're trying to come up with a fund so that they can pay for women to come to New York to have abortions. In Connecticut, they're making it illegal for states to prosecute people who've had abortions in Connecticut, even if they're residents of those states. I mean, they're trying stuff, which is what you should do.
Yeah.
You should try some things. But the day after this Roe leak, Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York State, who only got that job because of the Cuomo shenanigans of yore, after he was walking around in a blanket on his property and then resigned, decided to do, I think, to take an action that undercuts every messaging about voting, every message about voting that they had been giving all day to try to fundraise off of you.
Yeah.
Because what she did was she, so first of all, her first lieutenant governor that she appointed was indicted and was already, like, this was already known to her when she appointed him. And then he obviously had to leave. Yeah. So she needed to replace her lieutenant governor, and she is trying to figure out a lieutenant governor that she can run with so that New Yorkers who don't care about her at all will actually reelect her when she has to run for office again. Mm-hmm. So she took upstate Congressman Antonio Delgado from a frontline seat that is, that has no bench. The day after Roe was announced, upstate New York
had been repped by Republicans.
That had been repped by Republicans up until, like, that
was,
had
he
been,
flipped it. It was a flipped seat, right?
He flipped the seat. People in the district worked so hard to flip that seat.
Yep.
And then she took him out of that seat
The
very day that we were being told
from
that
a Congress
just have to
that has, like,
harder.
A six-vote majority.
So Congress lost a Democrat because, again, there is no world in which a Democrat wins that seat now.
And there's no Democrat prepared to run in
there's
November.
There's no Democrat prepared to run in November. There is no one. I mean, it's a wacky district. It's a district you really have to know well to run in. And literally, he won a primary with seven different people because he was backed by big money. And in that primary, not a single one of those people still lives in the district. They all moved into the district to run. Some of them were from the district originally, but all of them moved in to run. And when they didn't win, they moved out. So there is no one to run, save maybe one state senator, who, if she doesn't run, I'm just, like, too bad. But that's the kind of brilliant planning Democrats are doing right now. Now,
well, she probably had new confusion because she has COVID.
Well, she probably had new, she's been walking around maskless telling us COVID's over and then got COVID and now she has new confusion. The other thing that's so crazy about that, though, is it's like, she's from Buffalo. 50% of her voters, more than 50% of her voters, more than 50% of Democrats in New York State are in New York City. Well, why would you not pull someone from a guaranteed blue seat in New York City?
And also just for your own, I don't actually think that that helps her election chances as much as she maybe thinks it does. I actually think that's a sort of confounding pick.
It was
anyway.
Such a confounding
pick. Right? Pick someone from the city just to have someone from the city because the people in the city are already distrustful of her.
Exactly. The whole thing was such fucking Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
And so insulting to have happen on the day that, like, women lost their bodily autonomy.
Right.
Like, and a day where Democrats' main response was to
vote
harder.
For us. Right, yeah.
Like, fuck off. Yeah. But in any case, Democrats out there making all the wrong choices at every level.
Right.
Meanwhile, we have a mayor's race going on in L.A. No one's heard from any of the candidates we don't. Right. Me and Brent don't because we live in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
But, the mayor's race in New York City is happening. It's on the June ballot. I mean, sorry, Los Angeles is happening. It's on
you
the
just
June
got
ballot.
Back.
It's hard to know where
You've been
I am anymore.
Yeah.
Exactly. But there's only one candidate anyone has heard from, and he's a mall developer.
Right, and that's because he's a billionaire.
And he's
so,
a Republican.
Like, he's
a Democrat, but he's a Republican.
Yeah, well, he just changed parties. His name's Rick Caruso. He's advertising anywhere that you could possibly consume media.
That's right.
So, like, he's the only person who has any name recognition, even though Karen Bass is running, who's been a congressperson from the area for decades now at this point. But she, mysteriously, is not running any ads anywhere, except maybe on Samsung television.
Samsung television, yeah.
And Rick Caruso is winning. I mean, all the polling has him ahead. Yeah. Now, granted,
well, because people have heard his name.
People have heard his name.
I defy you to find one single person who can name more than three candidates that are in this race right now in anywhere in LA.
Granted, I think the race, at least to a degree, changes once there's only two of them, right? We're looking at a jungle primary right now, and it's going to be him and Bass. There's just no way that it won't
Is it? Because no one has any way of knowing that.
I think all the polling has her in second, and then everybody else, like, in single digits, with, like, Caruso at, like, 30 and her at, like, 25 or something like that.
Because this is a jungle primary system, which means that any amount of chaos could break out in this race. There is no reason to not run any ads at all.
Right.
Leading she, into the primary.
And she has money. I mean, she doesn't have as much as him, but I think she has like $3.5 million or something like that. Like, she could buy some YouTube ads.
Exactly.
Good God, I can't watch a YouTube video without seeing a Caruso ad.
I know.
Jeez Louise. But he is in some heat, thankfully, right now, because Planned Parenthood released a statement after the Roe leak last week, because he, as a former Republican, has given money to Kevin McCarthy and to Mitch McConnell and to John Kasich, all people who are very pro-life.
I'm shocked.
So he claims that he's pro-choice.
One of those people also is people who spoke at the DNC. I just want to remind everyone.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, right. Pro-lifer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they don't care.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Don't worry, Brent. You can be a Democrat and be pro-life.
We're a big tent party.
Yeah, we're a big tent party. We're so big that we don't have any principles at all.
Yeah. So anyway, I think, you know, Democrats are maybe hoping that that will move some votes. But, oh, I meant to mention this when we were talking about Roe and talking about voting harder. And this is the thing that, like, I think, look, do I understand why Dems are going to try and use this to get you to vote for them? Yes, obviously I do. Like, you would, right? Yeah. So, like, I mean, while it's annoying, I get it. You know, like, that's, you know, they haven't done anything, so they have to try something. Right, but the one thing I think, you know, there's been a lot of, like, you know, think pieces about, like, how this changes the electoral map and things like that. And I just, as upsetting as this is, Roe as a single issue moves the far right to the polls. It doesn't move Democrats to the polls. Like, they care about this issue, and maybe in this election it will in a way that it hasn't before. But I think if you are Democrats out there and you're thinking, well, I'm back in it right now, guys, I don't think that maybe that's right.
And that's
unfortunate, but, like, I just don't know that it moves large swaths of voters in the places that they're going to need to win to, like, hold on to the House.
I defy you to find one women's health issue that has single issue voters on the left.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, women's health, and I know this because I'm a healthcare advocate, right, and I know exactly how unimportant women's health issues become. I know, you know, we just had a huge victory today with the World Trade Center Health Program because they're finally thinking of adding uterine cancer to the list of covered conditions. That was the only cancer that wasn't covered before.
Right,
like,
of course.
That's how much nobody cares about women's health.
Yeah, you said you've been working on this for like a decade.
I've been working on this for like a decade. Right. Exactly. Yeah. To get one women's health condition added to a list of covered conditions for a major disaster. Like, that's how much people do not care about women's health. And sorry about it. That's also the reason we're not talking about long COVID. Long COVID is disproportionately affecting women because it's causing autoimmune issues, and women disproportionately suffer from autoimmune issues. That's why we're not going to talk about long COVID until it's too late. We're not going to talk about it until a critical mass of men are experiencing these issues. And it's going to probably be that 70% of women are having them and no one's been talking about it.
Yeah.
This is the reality of working on a women's health in a world where women have bodies. That, you know, voters on the left do not get motivated to the polls by these issues. It would be great if they could. It might be nice.
Right.
But that is not something that anyone should be relying on or even thinking optimistically about, because it has never once in history been the case. Never once.
Yeah. Really. Well.
Well, there it is. Also, Ohio's a mess.
Oh, my God. They had a primary last week. What a disaster.
Yeah. Well, it didn't help that the Congressional Progressive Caucus came and supported the moderate candidate against Nina Turner.
Mm-mm.
And here's the problem.
AOC endorsed Nina Turner like 12 hours before people started voting.
Here's the problem with having a Congressional Progressive Caucus that includes everyone who's a Democrat.
Right.
You end up with people in the caucus. The reason they had to endorse her is because Chantel Brown's in the caucus.
In the caucus and doesn't stand for the Green New Deal. And she's against everything.
Right. So, it's like, that is an example.
Taking more corporate PAC money than anybody on this planet. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. James Clyburn's down there, you know, tooting her horn.
Yeah.
Gross. But that's an example of why having a huge Congressional Progressive Caucus hasn't actually achieved anything for us, is because in primaries like this, we're not allowed to support the progressive candidate as the progressive caucus because the moderate in the race is in the progressive caucus. Then get out of town.
I know. It's too stupid. Yeah, but she's going to run for president, though. I mean, she basically said it after she lost. And, like, look, people hate Nina Turner, and I get it.
Sure.
She's a polarizing character.
Of course.
And she's also...
She is
a little deranged.
As ridiculous
and
glasses.
That, at least personally, is why...
It's why I love her.
She holds a special place in my heart, right? She's Nina Turner.
Yeah.
I am here for that.
Also, I think that this
like,
is...
Theater
matters in
politics...
Well,
right, yeah, exactly.
I think that this is what we're talking about. Like, someone like Nina Turner makes you talk about issues that you didn't feel like talking about because she did something wacky while she was talking about it. That is that is serving a political purpose. It maybe isn't how you yourself would approach that if you were a boring person. But like the idea that someone who's a wacky character, and Donald Trump proves this as well, the idea that someone who's not a wacky character has no, or who is a wacky character has no place in politics, is sort of deranged because all political messaging is just wackadoodle theater.
Yeah.
And the more wackadoodle you are, the more you get to talk about stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But and also in Ohio, J.D. Vance won. Which
J.D. Mandel.
J.D. Mandel. Right.
Donald Trump accidentally endorsed everyone
right.
by mixing up their names.
But that was really interesting because, like, he was, I mean, obviously that endorsement ended up meaning something, but it was really interesting because I saw them put up the map of where J.D. Vance won and where Trump won in the presidential versus where, like, some previous Republicans, like, have won in the past. Yeah. And it was like, the map was just an exact match. I mean, it literally, it moved the exact voters that it needed to move. I mean, it was just like, he won specifically because of that and Trump endorsement. And that is a little alarming.
Very.
Yeah.
Trump should not have that much power still over any voters.
No.
Including his own.
Because I think that there was a lot of thinking that maybe that wasn't the case any longer, right? And there have been other cases where maybe that has not been borne out quite as much, right? Like, I think that he's had some other primary losses.
Totally.
But, like, in Ohio, in a high-profile Senate race like that, like, that was a little upsetting, I think, for people.
Yeah.
For me, people.
I was going to say, for me, it was upsetting. Right. I felt upset by it.
Yeah. And now he's going to be running against what's-his-nuts, which is, like, I mean, that's going to be a slam dunk because he's an idiot. Yeah. What's his name? Tim Ryan?
Tim
right?
Ryan.
Yeah.
Most. Remember when he thought he was going to be the majority leader in the House?
I know. The one thing that I will say about Tim Ryan, and I disagree with him on a lot of things.
Remember when he ran for president? No, you don't, because one ever talked about it.
But I do like that. Now, he's wrong about the issues that he's raising as what the problems are here. But I do like, in a way, in a similar way that Sherrod Brown does, again, they're different on the issues, really is like pushing, like, I'm on the side of the workers.
That's true.
Like, that is a thing that, like, he is trying to do, which I have been imploring anyone to do in whatever the way they think is the best way possible. I mean, Tim Ryan, I don't think is the right messenger there.
No.
But, like, I think that he's, like, half getting it in a way that a lot of Democrats are 0% getting it.
That's true.
I think he's going to lose to J.D. Vance.
Well, he couldn't be a more boring messenger for any of these things. And I also feel like he's like a former football player, basically.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he looks like a Republican.
He does. Yeah.
And so if you
maybe in Ohio, that's the way to go.
You could
vote
for a real Republican.
Yeah.
Or Tim Ryan.
Yeah.
Why would you pick Tim Ryan?
Yeah.
But so in any case, on the other side of the being in favor of workers conversation,
we've had
a real folk hero emerge.
My God, Chris Smalls.
You guys, and this is, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast yet, because I can't remember when this happened versus when we last podcasted. But I think one of the things that really is exciting about this is that Chris Smalls looks like and sounds like what new young, fresh union leadership.
I think we did maybe in our last podcast. Yeah, we talked about, because it was a real grassroots, I think talking about. Yeah.
Unions should look and sound and be like the people they represent.
Yeah.
That was the whole idea of unions. It was having the workers represent themselves collectively. And I think for years, we've been watching unions sort of corporatize in an effort to look more like management or sound more like management.
Yep.
And there's a reason that anti-union rhetoric works on people when the union leaders themselves look like the boss. Because why would you trust that guy?
Yeah.
Whereas if we, you know, and I also think he was so smart for not, you know, going with a big union effort and instead trying to organize an independent union.
Yeah.
I think it has led to, you know, we've been seeing Starbucks stores unionize left, right, and center. We've been seeing tons of other union efforts succeed largely based on this example. And I think a lot of it has to do with how exciting it is to watch like a regular person come and show leadership in this way.
Totally.
Think this is what the labor movement in general needed was
for sure.
Somebody who's willing to wear an Eat the Rich outfit to meet the president.
What a dream that
he's
guy.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's the best.
I mean, I feel like one of the things that unions, especially because, you know, Biden claims to be very pro-union. He's pro a lot of the most boring middle-of-the-road unions. But, like, union leadership of late, because it's been so corporatized, has been afraid to really like take on the people in power in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And to really like step into the power of being a collective movement. And I think that Chris Smalls could be a really great example for people of how union leadership can actually like take the people in power to task, as opposed to just, you know, he went in and shook hands with the president, but he did it in a way, the president said to him, you got me, in trouble.
Yep.
You know, he did it in a way where he made sure that his presence was uncomfortable for them, as it should have been.
Yep.
And I just like, I feel like that is a such a good example for, you know, fledgling labor movements all over the country. And also be like the folk hero we needed for this moment.
Totally.
And we need that folk hero for every issue at the moment.
I know.
Too. You know, like we need a regular person to come in and not try to mimic. And that's, you know, we need those people in Congress too, because we need people to come in and re-envision the relationship regular people have to power structures. Just as we were saying at the beginning of the podcast.
I 100% agree in that, you know, we're talking about like, why aren't Democrats sort of like out there screaming in the same way that Liz Warren is in the streets? I think that if they really wanted to win in November, if they wanted people's votes, if they all sided with Chris Smalls here, right? So why aren't they? I mean, AOC finally got there, but it was sort of after she got dragged for canceling to, you know, to go to these rallies. Where are all of the Democrats who are supposedly in favor of workers and unions? Like, why are they like, get them out to Starbucks stores? Like, why are these Democrats not doing that? And it's because, I mean, I don't know why, but
it's money.
I mean, like,
it's because of money. It's because of who their donors are.
Right.
We know the answer.
But like, that's the answer. They should be doing that here too.
Absolutely. And I think that the fact that they're not is an example of why we need to throw them all out. Well, you know, I like the fact that they don't see this clear opportunity to represent real people in real life is why we need leaders who are willing to make them uncomfortable, but also why none of these people deserve to be representing us anymore.
Yep.
You know, like this is such a failure of leadership. This moment is a failure of leadership on so many counts.
Yeah.
You know, it's a failure of leadership when it comes to COVID. Things were supposed to be better under Biden because they were supposed to care about science. Somehow they're worse. COVID is literally everywhere. They've decided to mass infect us. There's no more funding for any assistance.
Yep.
They're talking about maybe making the next generation of vaccines only available to the most in need because we're not going to have any money to give them to everyone.
Jesus.
You know, we're riding airplanes, coughing on people without masks.
Right.
We're coughing on small children on city buses. Yep. Like, doctors aren't wearing masks in a lot of places. Like, I don't know what...
I assume the amount of money that would cost to actually purchase those is an amount of money that we have probably sent 10 times over to Ukraine just in the last 3 weeks.
For sure. So there's that. There's the student loan forgiveness issue, which Brent has been exercised about all during this entire, I mean, for a while, but also especially during this prep session.
Yeah, I mean, do we dive into this now?
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, there's been no word on this, right? And granted, they were starting to think about this when Roe happened last week. So I think to a certain degree, they're glad that they don't have to be out in the press telling what their plan is right now. Because nobody had said, he said that there was, that he was not considering $50,000, right? Because, and Biden said that specifically. So
they're so good at taking the thing people actually want and being like, whatever you think we're going to do, it's not what, it's like with the $2,000. And they were
right?
We'll consider $1,400, but we'll never give you $2,000.
Right.
Like, fuck off.
Yeah, I know. So there's a lot of chatter that it seems like it's going to be $10,000 and it's going to be means tested. We've already talked about means testing on this podcast. We don't need to get into that. It's stupid. They're just going to basically make it so like nobody can get it, right?
Yeah.
But like it's important to know, and I think a lot of people who are about to get $10,000 of loan forgiveness don't even fully understand this, because I think a lot of people think that if they get any forgiveness, then they're going to take it as a win, right? That they finally got the president to do something on this. But like, forgiving $10,000 is actually bad for borrowers, and it's better for banks and anybody who's actually administering those loans for a few different reasons. One, because you're just going to have to start repaying. And so obviously...
Right, you're going to restart payments.
Obviously, not paying is better than having to pay.
That's right.
But there's a few different reasons why that actually is not... doesn't really help in any sort of meaningful way. For starters, people who are low income are already on a payment plan that is based on whatever their low income is.
Right.
Forgiving $10,000 of their debt, and inevitably they have more than $10,000 worth of debt, their payments are still the same. And it might be an amount of, because their own income hasn't changed.
Exactly.
Right? Because their payments are being figured on their income. So like, if they are already paying an amount of money per what their income is that is already too much money for them to be paying every month, then they're still going to have to be paying the same amount of money.
Well, and we're talking about the kind of people whose debt never actually gets erased.
Well, so, and that's, yes, 100%. That's the other thing is that...
I stepped on it.
No, sorry.
I was excited.
No, please. That's absolutely it. The other reason why that's not actually helpful to people is that let's say that you have $50,000 worth of debt, right? And a lot of people have debt that is that high or way higher than that. If they forgive $10,000 of that, you're still going to be paying the same APR, which is high for student loans,
right,
on the original amount of the loan. So they're forgiving $10,000 of the overall loan balance, but you're still accruing all of this insane, it's usually at 6%, 7%, 8% on student loans. So like that's going to accrue again. Over time, you're going to be literally back to where you were because you're not actually paying down the balance of your loan. You're paying your fucking interest.
That's right.
Right? So like $10,000 is not good for anyone other than the people who are going to start to continue to, or who are going to start to get their checks again.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean banks, right?
That's right.
Because the payments are going to restart. So like, don't accept this $10,000 as a huge gift to you. When Biden comes out and has a huge deal and has students, you know, on stage with him and like makes a massive deal about forgiving $10,000 worth of debt, he didn't really actually do anything other than like, you know, give a boon to the banks that are going to start getting payments again.
Well, I think like that's when you have to start thinking critically about like what are the details of this plan, because like, for example, he could forgive $10,000 of debt and keep the payments frozen. And
right? That's
fine.
He's not going to do that.
He's not going to do that.
He's going to forgive the debt and then start the payments again.
Exactly. Right. So this, you know, this is an impetus to actually start something. Like, if they just never restarted payments, then that would be better for you than $10,000.
100%.
But that's not what he wants to do.
That's not what he wants to do.
You know, this is a sort of excuse where he can look like he's magnanimous
and
for restarting
payments.
And
make no mistake, it's because he doesn't think that you deserve it.
Exactly. Also, he could make sure that student loans cannot charge those kinds of APRs. He could make those interest-free loans.
Well, that's the other
thing. He could do something so that the $10,000 actually does cover $10,000 of your debt.
I have long thought a good solution for him on this, and I don't know if I've said it on this podcast, but is actually to forgive whatever you have accrued in interest.
Yes.
But that
so
doesn't
many
work.
People have paid their balance already, but they just, because of interest, aren't done with their fucking loans.
Right, like 10 years ago, they owed $50,000, and now they owe like $170,000.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
That would do so much more.
But then the banks wouldn't make any money.
Well, exactly. We gotta take care of the banks.
We gotta take care of the banks.
But I mean, like, the whole conception here that, you know, a means-tested plan is... The people who gain the least out of these kind of measly programs are the people at the bottom of the income spectrum anyway. You know who can probably afford to pay off their student loans is people who make $120,000 a year and only have $6,000 left in student debt. That's who the $10,000 would probably benefit the most, but they're not going to get the $10,000. The $10,000 is going to be a $10,000 giveaway to banks for customers that they will never have to lose, because those are people that will never finish paying off their debt.
Exactly.
You could just decide that they're done.
Yep.
I mean, this is, I think, a good example of why you should rethink your relationship to government. Once we've decided the goal is people not having student debt, then we can be like, what could we try?
Yeah.
We could try anything.
Yeah.
You know, if the goal is like, how do I take action on this issue I made a promise about without actually ruffling any feathers or changing anything about the system, then this is the kind of solution you come up with right, where nothing changes, but you feel like you can announce something, but everyone's kind of like, where is this? It's like, you know, with the subsidies on Obamacare, it's like, yeah, is it better than not having subsidies? Sure. Of course. Is it affordable to get healthcare as an individual buyer? No.
Right.
So like, fuck off with your fucking subsidies.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it's better to have the subsidies than not. It didn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
This is like a way to go through a very elaborate process to not solve the problem.
Yep.
Because they're not interested in identifying problems and solutions. They're interested in sort of like, they're interested in what's possible.
Yeah.
And if you free yourself of the limitations of what's possible under this system in these circumstances with these political realities and think to yourself, what would make a difference?
Yeah.
This is not the plan you come up with. Right. The plan you come up with is one where banks lose a little bit of money and people gain a ton of freedom.
Yeah.
And that's doable in this circumstance.
It is.
But this kind of plan is not going to make any young person think to themselves, I should vote for Joe Biden.
No, it's not.
They're going to think to themselves, what the fuck?
And that's the only... And that
It's the only reason he's doing it.
I was going to say, it's funny that you say that, because the only reason that he's thinking about doing it in the first place is because he's trying to get the youth vote back in the midterms.
Because they cannot figure out where it went.
I know.
Somehow, it escapes them entirely.
There's been so many articles about like how the administration can't figure out why the young voters aren't supporting them anymore.
It's like, it's the amount of out of touch that they are on that issue.
It's so good.
They don't have one person in their administration who's on TikTok. Just like anywhere. The Washington Post is on TikTok.
I know.
Like someone in the world could tell them what's going on, and yet they cannot hear it.
Yep.
Nope. But I mean, like, this is the kind of plan you come up with when you're not trying to solve a problem, because you cannot you're not willing to rethink your relationship to government.
Yeah.
And it is, I think, time.
It's a kind of problem that you aren't interested in, because the problem that you are interested in is whether we're reducing the deficit or not.
That's right. Good news. We are.
Yeah, that was a big announcement last week from administration.
You know how we love reducing the deficit. Uh-huh. You know how much that affects our pocketbooks.
Well, it's easy to reduce the deficit when you're not actually giving anybody any help.
That's
on
right.
Anything, right? Like,
yeah.
Of course we reduced the deficit. Like, what the fuck did we do this year?
Right, exactly. We sat around on our thumbs wondering why we couldn't act on numerous pressing issues,
right.
And that is how we reduced the deficit.
We could keep doing that until the end of time, and we'd probably erase it entirely.
That's right. And yet...
That might be his plan.
That might be his plan, and I think what we would find when we get there is that life is not better.
Yeah. I saw some article today that was like, when the Republicans take control of Congress, they're gonna want to cut Social Security.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
They can dream big now.
But you know who else is going to want to cut Social Security?
Democrats.
Joe Biden, specifically, but also probably other Democrats.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a great way to get Democrats to vote for you. Cut Social Security. Even George Bush didn't end up doing that because it was so unpopular. And yet, but this is, like, once the Republicans...
Biden loves a grand bargain, though.
Oh, well, I mean, what
tried to cut Social Security about 74 times.
And it's one of his pet issues. There's nothing he wants more than to cut Social Security, a program that, oddly, only his voters benefit from. But whatever, that's Joe Biden for you.
This fucking guy.
I just, like, this is a perfect example. Because this, cutting Social Security has been one of those things that has been something that every Republican has thought they've wanted to do, but have found cannot be a political reality because voters won't allow it.
Yeah.
Every Republican president, you know, including W, was out there trying to cut Social Security and failed.
Yeah.
The reason they failed is because voters are not interested.
Yeah.
Republicans are right now in a moment where their grand plan is going so brilliantly that they are dreaming big enough that they might actually try to cut Social Security.
Yeah.
And just say they're doing it. They might not even try to hide it behind bullshit. They might just announce that they want to cut Social Security and it's a great idea and actually go for it.
Yeah.
And they might do that while having won millions fewer votes than Democrats. They might do that knowing that 70% of the country or more is against it. Yeah. I mean, the sky is the limit for them right now.
I know.
And with them thinking so expansively,
yeah,
I just feel like we could be thinking more expansively.
I agree.
They have decided to divorce themselves of the limitations of their current structures.
Yeah.
They are not being shackled by democracy.
No.
They're not being shackled by the reality of how the economy works. They're not being shackled by the fact that most of them are married to women who have probably wanted abortions at some time in their life. They're living their best lives with their imagination is flowing.
I know.
And I just don't understand why our imagination is so stagnant when they're dreaming so big right now. I just feel like we should invite ourselves to dream bigger.
It's the podcast, ladies
and gentlemen.
And
that's the podcast. We're back on track. We had a lot to get off our chest this time around.
We did.
Maybe next time we'll have news. It's
we
hard
pulled
to know.
No facts from any articles this week.
The only fact you need is that your imagination could be bigger.
By the way, be impressed by that.
You guys, we did that off the top of our heads. And it's because there was only one point that I really came here to make.
Right.
And I've made it in every story we've discussed so far.
Yeah, you have. Well, that's been the most impressive.
I feel like I'm doing like a really great improv run right now where I like did actually like get back to the
well, you gave
point.
This podcast a through line that I don't know that it's really ever had.
I know. I'm congratulating
really,
myself,
you
obviously.
Really, you really thought about story in this one.
It feels like this is the night to go to Second City and perform in an improv show or something.
Or at least have therapy.
Or at least have therapy. This would have been one epic therapy rant.
It would have.
I feel like I would have been really proud of myself.
Yeah, and it's like almost exactly an hour too, so it just would have
the exact amount of time I had.
Yeah.
This is my set, you guys. This is my stand-up set.
Yeah. Well, you're crushing.
I'm crushing. In any case, call your reps. Even though we tell you to dream bigger than that, mm-hmm. do that too. It takes like 5 seconds, and you should put them in your phone book so that it's easy. I put them all in my phone book, and I write P dash their name so that when I sort, I can sort for the letter P, and then I just have all of them right there.
Why P?
Well, because they're politicians. It's my political phone calls. Okay. You can do it with any letter. But just one that you'll remember.
Yeah, I got it.
But so if I sort for P in my phone, all my politicians come up, I can call everyone.
Oh, God.
I do it for my state reps. I do it for my federal reps. I do it for New York and California because sometimes I'm bored.
Yeah, amazing.
I sorted them all. And that way, every morning, I think to myself, it's time to call Dianne Feinstein. And then I just do it.
And you got somebody in her office.
I got someone in her office. And that person was like, we are really concerned about this. And I was like, your concern is not enough.
Yeah,
I need a plan. Do something. I want to hear that you have a plan. What's your plan? And when they tell you that you need to come up with a plan, tell them that you actually pay them a salary to come up with plans.
Maybe Dianne Feinstein will somehow be the perfect person to do this. Because if anybody is divorced from reality, it's Dianne Feinstein.
She might have the imagination to pull this off at the moment. Because she's living in a different time and place. And that
it's so terrible. God.
Is terrible and yet our only hope. But call your reps. If you have the opportunity, first of all, protest at anyone's house.
Please.
These people are not private citizens. They're public servants.
Right. Also, Christine Blasey Ford had to fucking move home.
Exactly.
Because people were at her home.
Doctors are getting shot in front of abortion clinics over the last many decades all over the place.
Yeah.
They couldn't go to work safely. I don't know why Brett Kavanaugh deserves to have a peaceful night of watching television while he's busy trying to strip us of our bodily autonomy.
No, he doesn't.
Also, that's not even his seat. He stole that seat. So, like, fuck him.
Yeah.
But, like, show up in front of anyone's house and do not ever let yourself get distracted by respectability arguments about how your methods of protest are wrong.
No.
Your methods of protest are only wrong if they don't work.
No. That's right.
We are in a world in which we're thinking expansively about our opportunities, we are no longer living by respectability politics because it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
So in any case, dream big.
Mm-hmm.
Unicorns and everything.
Yep.
And make some phone calls. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.